So we're on the Gemara on Daf Chav Tes on base. About the 10th line at the top. Omer Avina. First word on the line is Ha. First word on the line is Ha. Okay, we're ready to go. Remember, we discussed on the previous Omud that not in every case where two people happen to witness something would that be considered Eidos. There has to be an, a formal appointment of the Eidim, which is called Atem Eidai. That's to appoint the Eidim. So the Gemara explains a little bit more about that now. The Gemara says, Omer Avina, the Temer of Papa, Shma Minomi Ha, Ha the Omer of Yehuda, Omer Rav, Sorech Sheyoymar Atem Eidai. You have to say, making a formal appointment, and say that you are the Eidim. Loi Shna. It makes no difference, ki omar loiva. If the loiva, who's the one who's basically incriminating himself, is he the one who's appointing the edim? Veloishna, ki omar malva. Or if the lender announces that these are the edim, and then veshosik loiva, and the loiva was silent. So either the loiva formally appoints the edim, or the malva says to the Edim, you are the Edim, and the loiva remains silent. So presumably, if you remain silent, that's a sign of admission. And the Gemara explains, Tama da omar loiva loi. It's only if the loiva would say, no, I absolutely protest, and I'm not prepared to consider these two as Edim, well then, indeed, they would not be Edim. But, says the Gemara, but if you were silent, then hachanami, then it'll be fine, and that would be considered Edim. So basically, there's two ways of appointing the Edim. Either the loiva appoints them, or the malva appoints them, but the loiva remains silent. Remember, at the end of the day, what's important to us is that the loiva is appointing the Edim, either verbally so, or by remaining silent when the malva appointed them. Why is it critical that the loiva is the one who's appointing the Edim, because he's the one who's admitting that he's chayav to pay the money. Says the Gemara, Hahu dahava kori lei. There was this person whom they used to call Kav Roshi. Kav Roshu. Now, what does that mean, Kav Roshu? So look at Rashi. It's the sixth narrow line. Kav Roshu, Mole Kav, Kav is a measurement, of Shtarois Yesh Olov. He used to be called a bunch of documents. That was his name. A bunch of documents. Kav Shtaru. He's got a whole bunch of documents upon him, which presumably means, it's another way of saying that he's a big Baal Chayv, he owes a lot of money. There are a lot of documents that are, as it were, hanging over him. Omar, so he said, Man Masik B. He said, to whom am I chai of money? Elo, ploini or ploini. In other words, I don't admit that I owe anybody money besides for Ploini. Look at Rashi. Man masik bi, lemi ani chayav klum. To whom am I chayav to pay any money? So this is rather peculiar. Even though he was called the Kav Rashi, which means he has a whole bunch of stories, seems to be he was known as the well-known borrower. Yet here he was declaring, I don't owe anybody money besides for Pliny. He's the only one that I admit that I owe money to. Pliny or Pliny? These two people, Pliny and Pliny. Okay, look in the Gemara, how the Gemara continues now. It says the Gemara, Osu Tavuhu Ledina, Kameid Rav Nachman. So these two, Pliny or Pliny, came to be Tevea, to claim against this fellow in Bezdin. After all, didn't he announce in public that although he denies owing other people money, but he definitely admits to owing these two people money? Well, hand over the cash then. Says the Gemara, Amar of Nachman, no, we don't have a proof that he really owes the money. Now, what does that mean? How can we not have proof that he owes the money when he announced in public that he owes the money? So says the Gemara, Amar of Nachman, Adam Osui, a person would want to do the following, Sheloi Lahasbia Es Atzmoi. Look at Rashi. Adam Osui. Loimar lebrios, a person would say to others, Chayev ani mo'ois leploini, quote unquote. A person may well admit, even in public, that he owes money. Why? Lehisrachik me'ayin hora. In order to distance himself from ayin hora. How does a person distance himself from Ayin Hara when he admits that he owes money? Says Rashi, Sheloi lahasbia, Sheloi liroi, so that he should not appear soveya mimomen, satisfied with money. So the word lahasbia is from the word soveya. In other words, wealthy people do not like to appear wealthy. Not just for practical reasons, because they don't want people knocking on their door asking for donations, rather because if they appear wealthy, then maybe it will attract an ayin hara. Everyone's talking about how rich they are. So therefore, said Rav Nachman, even though this person admitted in public that he owes money to two people, but it's not necessarily a sign of true admission. Maybe the only reason he's saying that is that there shouldn't be ayin hara. He's saying that so that people shouldn't think that he's rich. He shouldn't look soveya. He shouldn't look satiated with money. But it's not a clear proof that he owes the money. And remember, he never appointed Adim. If he would have appointed Adim and said to two people, listen, I'm about to admit to the following. You're listening to this. Yes, I am incriminating myself. Well, there's no backing down from that, obviously. But he didn't have that. He just announced in public, I don't owe anybody money except for Pliny or Pliny. Says Rav Nachman, that's not proof. Because maybe he was doing so that people shouldn't think he's wealthy. People should think, oh, wow, look how much he owes. And even though he's living in a 7-floor mansion with 4 cars and 2 swimming pools, but he really owes $1 million to Pliny, he owes another $1 million to Almaini. And maybe that's why he's saying it. But not because he really does owe the money. Now we have a similar story, which is a follow-up to this first story. By the way, it's interesting. I had a discussion once, fairly recently, with Rabbi Kornfeld. The halachas of Ayin Hora, even though it sounds a bit hooky spooky, but it's mufurish halachas in many places that one has to avoid ayin hara. One shouldn't do something which is very eye-catching and get people talking about you, etc. So, for example, I remember I once had a shayla over here in the neighborhood. A young guy who's an avreich in kollel, morning, afternoon, and night, clearly is not sploshing around in money. And Baruch Hashem, he had many children, one after another. Literally, I think 5 or 6 children, the oldest is maybe 7 or 8, mamish back to back. And in order to be able to park them all off. This one goes to the Beis Yaakov here, and this one goes to a gan somewhere else. And this one goes to a cheder all over the shchuna, etc., etc. He felt it absolutely necessary, literally a requirement, not just a luxury, to buy a car. But not just to buy any old car. Baruch Hashem, he had a large family. He had to buy a large seven-seater car. That's the only way he could have some normality in his life. It's not possible to go around town every single day dropping off five kids at five different institutions. So remember, he asked me, he was very concerned. Maybe it looks a little bit strange for an avreich in Koilel, and he clearly did not have money. In fact, he told me he was going to have to borrow money to pay for this car and then make a whole payment plan, etc., etc. But for an avreich in Koilel to be driving around in a fancy schmancy seven-seater car, maybe that's rather eye-attention, eye-catching. Another shaila is that somebody told me, and this person was quite a wealthy individual, and he bought quite a fancy car, and he was worried about Ayin Hara. So a member of Kornfeld told me something very interesting, which maybe answers more of the second question than the first. And he said this to me in the name of Rebbe Elyashiv. He said, Ayin Hara in particular exists when somebody's living a type of lifestyle which, at least on the surface, doesn't seem in fitting with his financial status. But if a wealthy person lives in a big home, that's not Ayin Hara, because that's appropriate. Wealthy people live in big homes. Doesn't mean every single wealthy person, and it doesn't mean only wealthy people, but it's not anything unusual. So if a wealthy person lives in a big home, nobody's going to say, oh, wow, look at this. Gosh, wow, how's he living? Say no, he's doing well in his business. Baruch Hashem, he's got a big home. That's not Ayin Hara. That at least asks the second question, answer the second question. The first question, which I did not discuss with him, maybe is still outstanding, because you have an avreich in Koilel running around in a seven-seater car, then maybe that would be viewed upon, rightly or wrongly, as inappropriate. Well, he's not in fitting with what people think his financial status is. Again, nobody knows. Could be he's a multi-billionaire, nobody knows about it. But firstly, I happen to know that he's not. And also, b'teva hadvarim, one could probably assume that your standard avreich is not running around with $1 million. So the Maisa discussed this with others, and the agreement was also that in that particular case, there's also no Ayin Hara, because he's doing something which is clearly necessary, and people can see you're driving this car, Baruch Hashem, it's full of kids. If he's driving a Rolls-Royce sprawling around the town, well, that's totally unnecessary. But to buy a seven-seater when he's got seven children is a very, very normal thing. There's nothing luxurious or fancy about that. And under circumstances like that, there'll be no issue of Ayin Hara.
Can Ayin Hara be if you're in that scenario of you're walking by and you see someone has a big house, can you say, why is he zocher for a big house and I'm not zocher for a big house? Why is his business taking off and mine is falling flat?
Yes. Again, the Gedorim of Ayin Hara are very difficult, because we're dealing with things that we don't really understand, so we can only base it on what it says. But the fact that, why was he Zeicher and I was not Zeicher, that's not Ayin Hara. That's just plain old jealousy. Ayin Hara is when people start talking, not just, well, how was you Zeicher, but rather, wow, gosh, look what he has. How does this make sense? After all, he's not earning $1 million as far as I know, etc., etc. The fact that somebody's Matzliach in his business or his children or his health or his wealth, whatever it may be, so good for him. Somebody's jealous, so he has to work on his middos. Very often, Ayin Hara has nothing to do with bad middos. It's just gossip. Oh, wow, gosh, look at him. She's like, wow, look, he's got his third car now. Wow, interesting, funny, because I wouldn't have thought he needed it. I'm not jealous, it's gossip. But al kaponim, we have to know Ayin Hara has a koyach. We know this from Yaakov Avinu. The Torah tells us he asked his children not to enter Mitzrayim all in one gate. We'll see all 12 children together. Oh, wow, look at this big family, etc., etc. Okay, so back into the Gemara. Therefore, this is the principle that our Gemara was teaching us as well, that it may be a very normal thing for a person to do all he can to distance himself from the Ayin Hara, even if it means admitting he owes money. And therefore, it's not a clear proof that he actually does owe the money, because rather he's just doing it not to look soveya, lahasbiya. Rashi explains, Savia from the Lashon of Svia, like the Ochalta Vesavota. He doesn't want to look satiate, doesn't want to look this wealthy guy driving around in three Cadillacs, so he'd rather not have Ayin Hara, and that's why he admitted to owing money when in actuality he doesn't at all. Okay, so now we have a very similar story. Says the Gemara, but this is a continuation, this is a further Chiddush. Says the Gemara, Hahu Dahavakori Lei. There was somebody else who was called, also a very strange name. What was his name? Achpara, which means a mouse. Deshachiv Adinri, who's sleeping on money. Anybody have any friends who was called that? Mouse who sleeps on money. What does that mean? Look at Rashi. Says Rashi, Achpara Deshachiv Adinri, Oshir. What they meant was by this nickname that he's a wealthy person who doesn't benefit in any way from his money. In other words, he's miserly, he's stacking up this money, but he's not using it at all. So, what's the comparison to a mouse? Like this mouse who sleeps al din rezov on golden coins but doesn't do anything with it. But the he just sleeps over like the proverbial moshel of the money stashed under the mattress. So there you are, sleeping on all this cash, amassing all the wealth, but you're not actually doing anything with it. So that's what it means. That's why this person was known, rightly or wrongly, but that's the way he was viewed, as to be a wealthy person, but he doesn't actually benefit from his money. He seems to be very miserly. Says the Gemara, Ki Koshochiv, when he was about to pass away, Omar, he said, Planya Uplanya, which obviously means Plany Uplany, this guy and that guy, Reuben and Shimon, Maskubi Zuzi, have lent me money. So again, we're talking about somebody who, on the one hand, is known to be very stingy and miserly, not very happy to give away his money. But here he clearly admitted that he does owe the money. And then he passed away. Bosar Deshochiv. After he passed away, Osu, they came. Who came? This Plany or Plany. Tovinu Leyoroshin. And they came to the inheritors of this Plany or Plany, and they said, well, listen, your father has just passed away and he openly admitted that he owes the money. So here we are coming to you as the inheritors. Please, can you pay up your father's debt? Osu lekamei d'Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yosi. So they came to Rabbi Shmuel bar Rabbi Yosi. So we'll see now there's a machloikas on how to paskin in this case. If we stop over here, what would we say based on the previous story? On the previous story, we've learned a very important yesod, that admission of owing money, again, without the formal appointment of Edim, may not be considered an admission. Why? Because there's always the possibility that he's just saying it, shaloi lahasbia, so that he shouldn't appear satiated as if to be very wealthy, and therefore he'd rather be viewed as being poor. So if we continue that principle into our story, maybe the same would apply. What's the major difference, however? What's the difference between the previous story and our story? The previous story is talking about somebody who is alive and healthy and well. In this particular story, we're talking about somebody who's literally on his deathbed. So he knows that whatever he says is not really going to impact him, but rather it's going to be his children. So therefore, look at the Gemara. Says the Gemara, Osu lekamed Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yosi, Omar lehu, and he said, Ki omrinon. Where do we say that Odom Osui Shaloi Lasbia is Atzmoi, quote unquote, When do we apply the principle of a person would want not to appear satiated from money? Hanimili mechayim. That's only true when as long as he's alive. Aval achar misa loy. But after he passes away, then it wouldn't apply. Because this person said it on the brink of death, so it doesn't make sense that he would want to avoid an ayin hara. What do you mean ayin hara? He's about to leave the country, about to leave this world. If a person is alive and healthy and well, so then he doesn't want to appear satiated with money. He'd rather, chas v'shalom, there's no ayin hara against him. But when somebody's on his deathbed and says that, Rabbi Shmuel was mechadish, then this principle doesn't apply. You can't say, I don't want people to be talking about me. But what do you mean? He's dead. Which means, therefore, how do we view his admission? As a valid admission. And he really is chayav the money. Don't come with me with an excuse. I didn't really mean it. I just wanted to avoid an ayin hara. Says Rabbi Shmuel, that only applies to somebody who's alive, but not somebody who's about to die and then did die. So therefore, the Yorashim would have to pay up. Like every Yorish, by the way. A Yorish, an inheritor, cannot come with an excuse, I didn't borrow the money, it was my father. Why not? When somebody lends somebody money and then the borrower passes away, what right does the lender have to claim the money from the Yorushim? After all, the Yorushim, the inheritors, did not borrow the money. And the answer is one word, what we call a shibud. Maybe in English it would be called a leaning, which means I'm not claiming against the particular person, I'm claiming against the estate. When somebody borrows money, then his nechasim, his assets, become meshubad. They become committed, as it were, to the loan. So when he passes on, what was it that the Yorashim inherited? The inheritors inherited assets which had a shibud. And therefore, the lender can absolutely come to them and say, excuse me, I'm claiming the money. What do you mean? But we didn't borrow. I'm not saying that you borrowed, but I am saying that you happen to own an asset which has a leaning on it. By the way, the same is true also for when you purchase something. If I purchase a field, for example, from somebody who borrowed money, I purchased it after the loan. The lender can come to me as the purchaser and say, I'm sorry to tell you, I'm seizing the land from you. Why? What's it got to do with me? I never borrowed the money. Well, the original person who borrowed the money has got no money left. In fact, the only asset he owned was the field, and he has sold it to you. Okay, so I might consider that why should I have to pay for somebody else's debt? The answer is, once again, the lender is not claiming against me. Rather, he's claiming against the asset which has a shibud, and you bought that asset. So maybe you took a risk, maybe you knew, maybe you didn't know. The Gemara talks about it. A shtar has a koil, whatever it may be. The bottom line is, you are sitting on an asset which has a shibud, which has a leaning. Therefore, the fact that I am not the borrower is not an excuse. So too in the case of the Yorushim. So the only way that we could have exempted the Yorushim in our particular case is to say that the admission in the first place was a non-valid admission. Maybe the father just said it to avoid ayin hara. And that's what Rabbi Shmuel was saying, that no, that can't apply. Why can't it apply? Because you can only say that a person wants to avoid ayin hara as long as he's alive. But to avoid ayin hara after he passes away, no such thing. Says the Gemara, Paru Palga. So far, the Yorashim paid half of the debt. In other words, they accepted Rabbi Shmuel's psak, but apparently our father's admission was a valid admission. We really do owe the money, and therefore we have to pay up. Too bad. So for the moment, they've paid half. That's not the end of the story. Tovinu ledina. But then the debtors came back and they brought them to Bezdin, le'idach palga, for the other half. Thank you very much for paying up the first half, but there's still an outstanding debt. The second half hasn't yet been paid. Osu lekame derabchia. This time round, for some reason, they came to Rabbi Chiya. First time round, they went to Rabbi Shmuel. So we would have thought, well, once Rabbi Shmuel paskened the halacha finished, it's all over. Can't now rescind the psak. Omalohu, so Rabbi Chiya said, I would have disagreed with Rabbi Shmuel. Kashem, just like she'odom osui she'loi lasbia es atzmoi, just as a person would want himself not to look wealthy, kach odom she'loi osui she'loi lasbia es bonov. I maintain, says Rabbi Chiya, that the same logic applies that would apply to the father, to the person who was originally alive, would apply to the children. Maybe it's true. This fellow knew that he's just about to die, so therefore the Ayin Hara is not relevant to him. But he doesn't want his children to look wealthy either, for the exact same reason that he doesn't want Ayin Hara to harm him in any way. Well, it makes perfect sense. He doesn't want Ayin Hara to affect his children either. So he knows that the children are about to inherit his big estate. He doesn't want people to think that his children are wealthy. So he says, yeah, I owe Pliny and I owe an Almoyne. I want everybody to think that my children owe a lot of money. Therefore, he's saying, I would have disagreed with Rabbi Shmuel. I would maintain that the father's admission wasn't a non-valid admission. So not only do you not have to pay the second half, I would have maintained that even the first half, you were never mechuyev to pay. Omrule, so they said to him, ah, if that's the case, nasal, let us go venehader. Maybe we have to give back half the money. In other words, the money that has been paid, if Rabbi Chiya says that actually the admission was a non-good admission, we want to do the correct thing, so maybe we have to give it back. We were trying to claim the second half, but you have apparently paskened that actually we were not really entitled to even take the first half. So maybe we have to give it back. Omalohu, so he says, kvar hoire zokein. What does that mean, kvar hoire zokein? The elderly has already paskened. Look at Rashi. Nezel, we should go over Nahadir and Neshalem Hachetzi. Maybe we should pay up the half share Kiblanu that we have been makabel so far. He says, no. No. Kvahoira Zokin, the Zokin has already paskind. Rabbi Shmuel, he's the Zokin. Shekibaltem Alpiv. You were makabel the money Alpiv in accordance with his instructions. Veloy Achloik. And I will not disagree al masha also on that which he did. Now, I'm just wondering, Rabbi Yosef, do they point out in Art Scroll, even though he said, I'm not prepared to overturn Rabbi Shmuel's psak, and therefore you do not have to give back the first half, but was he still maintaining, however, that the second half you don't have to pay? Meaning, that which has happened already, I'm not going to overturn Rabbi Shmuel's psak. But the second half, which has not yet been paid up, that's not overturning the psak because nothing's happened. So was he still maintaining that they do not have to pay and they cannot claim the second half? Do Art Scroll point that out?
I think it's what Rashi said. Rabbi Chiya was unwilling to argue with Rabbi Shmuel's original ruling to
Right,
the
that's
extent
where.
that he would extract the money that the claimants had already collected.
Right. What about the remaining half of the money, though?
He merely held them back from collecting additional monies.
Ah, that's it. Right. That's it. That's what I was waiting to hear. In other words, Reb Chiya says, I have every right to make a psak with regard to that which is still relevant. With regard to the money, half of the money that's being claimed, I'm not going to overturn Rabbi Shmuel's psak. But with regard, therefore, the money which has been claimed already, I cannot extract that. But the money that has not yet been claimed, which means that Shaila is still outstanding, then it's my prerogative to disagree with Rabbi Shmuel. I'm going to have to argue with Rabbi Shmuel. But I'm not going to overturn Rabbi Shmuel's psak with regard to that which has happened already. Okay, we're going to hold it over here. Be'ez Hashem, tomorrow morning, Avo Aleinu L'Teiva.
Sure.
Oh,